Today's episode of Puck Soup is sponsored by Lisa. Lisa is on a mission to give your body the rest it needs with two awesome mattresses, plus accessories and bases for a better place to sleep. They also believe in providing a better night's sleep for everybody. And to date, they've donated more than 32,000 mattresses through more than 1,000 nonprofits. You know me, I'm always on the run, I'm always on the go, I'm always traveling, don't have a lot of time for the sleepy sleepies. This is why you need a great mattress, and Lisa is a great mattress. Get 15% off your entire order at lisa.com/soup and use the promo code soup, that's S-O-U-P. That's LEESA.com/soup, promo code soup, to get 15% off your entire order from Lisa. Enjoy the show.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an NFL commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.
I'm Greg Wyshynski of the worldwide leader ESPN, where Steve Levy and Barry Melrose will be on site for the Stanley Cup Final beginning on Monday.
I'm Ryan Lambert from Yahoo. I don't think we're covering it live.
I'm Sean McNew from The Athletic. We are covering it. Not me personally, but we'll probably have about 30 people down there. So, yeah.
Ryan, what if the Raptors show up to watch the Cup Final? Then will Yahoo cover it?
Oh, maybe, yeah. Might draw some interest.
Gotcha. Wink, wink. Nudge, nudge. All that. It's the final we're all excited about, obviously. It's, Nelly versus Marky Mark. It's John Hamm versus, I don't know, Dennis Leary. Who's the biggest thespian to emerge from
Boston? I think it's
Boston?
Also Marky Mark.
Oh, wait, is Matt Damon from Boston? I guess that'd be Matt Damon. John Hamm versus Matt Damon. Toasted ravioli versus those egregiously large bread bowls they put New England clam chowder in. It's really a battle of two remarkable cities and two cities that are constantly complaining about how they are aggrieved by other parts of the nation. It's St. Louis against those scrappy underdogs from Boston.
Yeah, it's been a long, like, 130 days here in Boston without a championship, so we gotta get it going here.
It's tough, I know. And it's been fun to see Boston fans, like, I was on Outside the Lines yesterday, and like, we talked about St. Louis as a sports town, and the Rams leaving and stuff, and, like, you know, the heartache of the Blues having never been to the Cup Finals since 1970, having never won a cup in franchise history, and immediately, like a fucking, you know, aggrieved bat signal went up. The Boston fans are in my mentions going, "Era, what about the Cardinals? The Cardinals are the ultra successful team. Era, the Cardinals, the Cardinals." And just like,
if I remember
God
right, the
damn.
Last time, the last two times the Cardinals made the World Series, they got clobbered by the Boston Red Sox. Am I right about this?
I think you are maybe correct, but it's just like, it's such the Boston. I don't know why the single most blessed sports town in our nation continues to have to play the underdog card so effectively. I mean, like, is it the blue collar aesthetic? Is that it? You fucking live there. You tell
well,
me.
Well, a part of it is most of the city will spend most of any season where they're pick a sport. The elite team is elite. Going, these guys suck. These guys are terrible. Like, the Patriots this year, everybody was like, they're finished.
Yeah.
Like, I feel like the Patriots usually start out, I don't watch football, but I feel like the Patriots usually start out somewhat slow. They lose a game or three in the first couple of weeks or whatever. Mm-hmm. And everybody's like, they're done. Brady's finished. And then
a lot of people saying it was the end of an era.
Yeah. Okay. And then, you know, like, they start playing the AFC East, just absolutely wail on every dog shit team they play, and roll through the entire playoff, get some, let's say, favorable calls to go their way, and then win a championship, and everybody's like, six rings, baby, dynasty, you know, all that shit, like the second it happens. It was the same with the Red Sox last year where, you know, early on I feel like people were kind of down on them. And then, I don't know, I didn't, I guess, hear it so much about the Bruins this year, although, you know, there were some people saying...
the usual Tuca haters.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. And they're not physical enough and that kind of thing. The only team, weirdly, the only team where they were like, this team should be way better than it is this dog shit Celtics team from this year. right. Where, yeah, they should have been better than they were, but everybody hated each other, so that kind of doesn't help.
Sean, have your thoughts drifted to Tyler Bozak this week?
Oh, yes, they have. Tyler Bozak versus the Boston Bruins in a playoff series. What could possibly go wrong?
I had to look back at it. I didn't realize he didn't play in games 6 and 7 of that 2013 series.
That's right. I think he was hurt back then. So, I mean, really, does that even count?
Our clear-cut
number one center wasn't available.
Right. That's what I'm saying. Right. Not to relitigate it, but, I mean, honestly, that's probably why they lost, without the services of a playoff hero like Tyler Bozak.
I do like that Tyler Bozak, when he signed with the Blues, did the same, I'm here to win a Stanley Cup, write it down statement that literally everybody does. But he... like, the wheel has actually landed on his team going to the Stanley Cup final, so now we all have to make a big deal out of his Players Tribune article that he wrote himself, sat down and just typed out, and actually put that in there.
Don't get me wrong, I'd love to win a Stanley Cup, but don't get me wrong, but...
Oh, yeah, fuck, yeah, exactly. I'm happy for him. Like, he's one of those guys, he was with the Leafs a long time, he chose the Leafs, and he left... not because he bolted for, you know, more money or something somewhere. They couldn't fit him under the cap, and he went and found a good opportunity somewhere else. And I'm rooting for him among several others on the Blues. Like, I did my bandwagon guide at the beginning of the season. I had the Blues as the number one team that was the easiest to cheer for if you weren't a fan of any of the playoff teams. And nothing that's happened in the last 6 weeks has done anything to change that. I think they're a great story, and the one thing I'm not looking forward to is I'm supposed to do my annual column where I do like a rooting guide for the other 29 teams in the league. Like, this is which of the two Stanley Cup final teams you should root for, and usually it's split pretty close to down the middle, and I have no idea how I'm going to get any Boston Bruin entries on this year's at all. Like, it might just be 29 people, 29 fan bases being told to cheer for the St. Louis Blues.
I did a piece for ESPN on basically looking at 18 players in the series and saying which ones do you think are the most worthy of a cup and which ones are not, and basically, you know, anybody that's under the age of 23 isn't worthy of a cup yet. Just wait your fucking turn, Charlie McAvoy. But, you know, I think on both sides, like, God, like, Pat Maroon, for fuck's sake, you know, taking less money to go play where his kid lives and, you know, then scoring the series-winning goal in overtime of Game 7 against Dallas. And, you know, like, even David, like, the David Backes thing to me is one of the most interesting things in the series, just because of, like, his history with St. Louis and the fucking cruel twist of fate from the hockey gods, where you finally get a chance to play for a cup and you have to beat your fucking best friends to do it. It's crazy how that worked. But it's a fun series. Like, the more I think about it, I mean, obviously, like, the Thornton thing would have sucked all the air out of the room with the Sharks and Bruins, and that would have been a really fun series just because of some of the principles involved. Like, the, you know, fucking fables would have been written about the Logan Couture versus Brad Marchand fight of that series. But the Blues are a really fun little story against Boston team.
And like, two other guys that I love is, first of all, the Jay Bouwmeester story. The guy who set the record, or at least temporarily held the record, for the longest career without playing even a single playoff game. Him going for the cup. And then the other one, and people forget this guy, I think, a little bit, but Alex Steen has been, like, do you realize Alex Steen is 35 years old?
Yes.
Like, If I told you Alex Dean was like 27, would it, like, I don't know. I feel like it, and I cheer for the team that drafted him, and yet I couldn't believe it. He's 35, but he's 14 seasons without a cup ring, and his dad, Thomas Dean, played 14 years without a cup ring for the Jets. That was like, Thomas Dean was one of those guys where it was like the best players to never win a cup, or even to get to a final. So this is like a family legacy that's going on three decades that has a chance to end. So I think that's pretty cool. The Blues almost top to bottom. I'm sure by halfway through the first period of game one, I'll have found some reason to hate half of these guys. But right now, I don't know. They're fun.
They are fun. And, you know, they sing Gloria. It's pretty great.
You know what?
Oh, do they? I hadn't heard about that.
Exactly. Like, is that a get thing? It. There's a song. That's fine.
The thing that struck me being there, though, is like they play the song and no one knows the words to Gloria. They know the word Gloria. And then it just gets kind of like mumbly, the crowd.
That's the
and
best.
And then they just go Gloria again. The one thing I wanted to mention about the Blues team, though, that I find really intriguing, and you mentioned Alex Dean and sort of the connection to the past and shit like that. Like, the amount of veteran guys that hang around the Blues has long been documented. Like, the fact that the Tkachuks live there and, you know, different generations of Blues players that have played for the franchise end up, you know, living in St. Louis. Some would say inexplicably. And, like, they were, it's been well chronicled, they were all around after they eliminated the Sharks in the bowels of the arena. Brett Hull, to the surprise of no one, in a bar. Kelly Chase walking around openly weeping, you know, like all this shit. And it's weird for me because there's a part of me that finds this to be beautiful, this sort of connection to the past. And here are the players that built the foundation of this franchise that we are now trying to capture the cup for. And they're a part of the story. And they're in the locker room. And Bob Plager's gloves are the trinket that we give out to the player of the game. And then there's another part of me that remembers Jeremy Roenick crying on television. And getting weepy about, like, these guys are doing something I can never do, and being very ridiculously about that, and
well,
kind
that,
of feeling
it's the
a
fact
little
that he did it on
this.
TV though.
I know,
and also that he played for like eight different teams.
That's also
after
case,
the Blackhawks. Like, you know, it is kind of
including
one of the teams
Flyers.
That had just won the Stanley Cup. So that was a little bit. Yeah,
there's still a part of me that's kind of like, hey guys, it's cool that you're here, but you know, it's like the graduated members of a frat.
Yeah, it's
coming
the,
back
it's
coming back
old,
for the
it's
kegger.
The old football players at the party in Varsity Blues.
Right. Yeah. There's a part of me that kind of feels that way. That, like, you know, here's you know, Alex Pietrangelo having this, you know, moment after being maligned for years as a captain, and he's, you know, he's not playing well, but he's helping to lead the team to the cup final and all this other shit. And, you know, like, everybody's interviewing Kelly Chase after the game to get his thoughts on what's going on. It's just the part of me that finds that to be a little weird, but it is kind of beautiful, the connection to the past. I get it. It's like when the Devils won the Cup in 95, if somebody tracked down Rocky Trottier and said, what do you think about this, Chief?
Dude, I'm a Leafs fan. If the Leafs ever make the final, they are going to be, Wendell Clark is going to be interviewed so many times, I can't cast any stones here. Like, they will be,
they're going to be exhuming bodies to interview them.
Like, they will have, like, Gilles Thibodeau will have his own 45-minute segment on the CBC News like three nights in a row. So I've got no, I can't say a word here.
And the ultimate irony is that, like, you know, they're going back to the three cup years for the Blues when they didn't win a game against the Habs twice and then didn't win a game against the Bruins, and, you know, bringing up the Bobby Orr picture and the whole thing. It's like, it's kind of like, hey, remember when you were the Washington Generals to everybody else's Globetrotters in your storied history? It's kind of crazy that they're the only team in NHL history that has been to the cup final multiple times and has never won a game. That's kind of a crazy stat.
It's crazy until you remember, like, the circumstance around it and how the NHL screwed up its...
Tell the youngins in the Puck Soup audience right. How they set it up.
So, children...
gather
what,
around.
The NHL, as you may have heard, had six teams for a while. They were called the Original Six, and they were not the original teams.
Jeff Merrick calls them the Arbitrary Six, sir.
Really? That's good, actually. That makes probably more sense than the Original Six. They weren't the original teams, but there were six of them, and 1967 comes along. the NHL finally decides to expand. They say, how many teams should we add? One? Maybe two? No, why don't we add six teams and literally double the size of the league in one shot? And they do, and they add six new teams, including the St. Louis Blues, and then they have to figure out how to format the league, because when you have six teams, you just there's no divisions or conferences or anything, and now you've got 12. So they decide they're going to have two divisions. One's going to be called the East, one's going to be called the West. And they do they take the six easternmost teams and put them in the East with like Philadelphia and Pittsburgh? No, they don't do that. They take the original six, put them all in the same division, and take the new six and put them all in the same division. So Philadelphia and Pittsburgh go in the West, Detroit and Chicago go in the East. Don't look at a map. It doesn't make sense, but that's how they do it. And of course, the six original teams are still good. The six expansion teams are garbage. And yet they format the playoffs in such a way that the East winner and the West winner meet in the finals. So for 3 years, you've got the original six teams mashing each other's heads in, and then the winner of that emerges and gets to play the winner of an expansion division, which happens to be the St. Louis Blues 3 years in a row, mm-hmm. and they're just cannon fodder. They go three years in a row, they get swept each and every year by Montreal and then Boston. The only game they really come close to winning is the last one, which is the overtime Bobby Orr flying goal, which was a cool memory. But basically, we had three straight years of terrible, anticlimactic, boring Stanley Cup finals because the NHL couldn't figure out how playoff format should work. But luckily, solved that problem, and now we have a format for <programs.
laughs> Got him. First of all, I love the idea of there having been like a little kids table division, you know, mm-hmm. to put it in Thanksgiving terms. That's pretty fantastic. Yeah. And two, Ryan, let's dispel myths here. Bobby Orr didn't need to jump. He didn't need to jump in that goal. We all know this, right?
Sure. And yeah, I've seen a couple St. Louis people this week just saying, you know, what people don't even know is that goal didn't matter. It's like, well, it was an overtime goal in the Stanley Cup final. I think it mattered a little bit.
Right.
But, okay. Yeah, no. Yeah, like,
it's not Jason Arnott against the Stars.
Yeah, it wasn't a Game 7. And
right.
Yeah, like yeah. The Blues were a significantly better team than – or the Bruins were
Blues fans are saying – that's an interesting argument to try to, like, take away someone else's moment because we were terrible. You guys were going to destroy us anyways.
Oh, yeah, okay. To be fair, it was from a guy I follow for soccer reasons, and so maybe it's the whole soccer thing of you only beat us 1-0 or whatever it is, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
One bounce at either way would have... All right, we'll revisit the Cup Final a little bit later and break it down. We all know you come here for hardcore statistical analysis, so, you know, we'll obviously offer that. But I do think that we should probably pay some lip service to the end of the Western Conference Final and the potential end of the San Jose Sharks as we know them. I got to tell you, man, there was probably no more deflating feeling in the entirety of the playoffs for me than when the Sharks came out in Game 6 without Joe Pavelski. And I just started to see the odds on the St. Louis Blues increase exponentially as more and more money was laid on them, to the point where I think the money line jumped from like 150 to like 200 within the span of a 10 minutes. And you just kind of knew at that point that there's no way that they're going to be able to overcome this missing those three guys. And it reminded me of the 05-06 Eastern Conference Final, where the Sabres lost like three of their six defensemen. And then Carolina, you know, won, you know, kind of based off that. It was such a mm-hmm. bummer. Like, I just feel a little bit cheated because, you know, it was a pretty good series when everybody was healthy and before Carlson fell apart.
Yeah, I wrote about that, I don't know, last week, I think. But, like, the second Erik Karlsson was clearly not able to play it anywhere, like, even 70% of what he is supposed to, the Sharks looked horrible, like just yeah. really bad. And even when he was on the ice, they were still pretty good. But like, you know, he obviously couldn't play as many minutes and that kind of thing. And so, yeah, they just went from like, oh, they're holding their own against the Blues to, oh, they should not be able to play the rest of the series. Like they should just forfeit. And
yeah,
and I mean, in the last three games where Karlsson, you know, I think played a combined like 20 minutes of ice time, they got outscored 12-2. Like, yeah. It wasn't even close. And we should also say Martin Jones ending that series at 869.
You
know, like
you're such a Martin Jones hater, and I don't understand why. He was the worst fucking goalie in the league this year.
I don't understand why.
I mean, first of all, you know, the existence of Aaron Dell in the same crease battery, at least give that some time.
Okay, he was the second worst goalie in the league this year.
But I understand the stats suck, and I understand that from a sort of a goals above replacement, I haven't seen the numbers, but I'm sure that there you could throw half the league between the pipes and probably gotten a better performance. But I mean, he wasn't the reason they lost, though. I mean, his numbers
But if they get like 900 goaltending in that series instead of 860, Greg, you're defending a guy who was below 870. Like, just
I guess I track back to Game 6 against Vegas and see what he did in that game. I'm like, oh, they wouldn't even be fucking anywhere if he didn't put that game
together.
Yeah,
that was 3 weeks ago.
Was it?
Yes. Like, when I brought it up, like, somebody, I can't remember who, but somebody just replied to me, like, the reason I thought San Jose had a, or Vegas had a chance to win Game 7 even after that was that Martin Jones was in net, and he did give up that tying goal with, like, 40 seconds left or whatever. And it's like, yeah, like... Look, before this season, I would have said, you know, Sharks are fine in net. Like, he's not a great goalie, but he's maybe slightly above average. And then this year, he was just so bad that it's one of those things where you're honestly going, maybe there's something like physically or mentally wrong with him, like going on behind the scenes that we don't know about. And, you know, maybe it'll come out someday, you know, interview or whatever, but like to go from slightly above average to 880 or whatever he was for the season, like, okay, man.
On a team that adds Erik Karlsson to their blue line.
Yeah, exactly.
Like, no less. He the final numbers to go beyond the box score, he had a 400% on his quality starts ratio, so that's pretty brutal. And then, according to Hockey Reference, and Hockey Reference's numbers don't often sync up with what you'll see on Corsica, because Corsica, I think, deals in just 5-on-5, and I think Hockey Reference does the totality of his play.
Hockey Reference, if you're talking about goals saved above average, their number is based on whatever the league average is. So, like, if the league average is 910 and he's 880, they just, you know... Compare the two numbers number of shots, not by shot quality.
Okay, so without the benefit of shot quality, his numbers in Hockey Reference are almost a minus 11 in goals saved above replacement, which is a pretty fucking incredible number for only 20 games played.
Okay, so that was in the playoffs.
Yeah, it was in the playoffs.
Yeah, so that he probably cost him about four wins, maybe, or two wins, three wins. Yeah, something like that.
I do wonder how much of that was affected from that stretch in the Vegas series when he was getting pulled, you know, from two out of three games and shit.
Yeah, for sure.
Yeah, but not great, Bob, as far as Martin Jones goes. Sean, what was your elegy for the Sharks?
Good team. They took the shot. You and I kind of talked on the bonus episode about whether their window is actually closed or not.
Yeah.
But I and you were more pessimistic than I was, but I think we both agree that if the window is not closed, it is very rapidly closing. Mm-hmm. And you know, it's unfortunate. They're going to, if this is it, they're going to go on that list of greatest teams to never win a cup, because they were right there.
Absolutely.
Just, you know, their cap era run of success in the regular season is pretty remarkable. And, you know, I'm a big believer that these days in the NHL, the best you can really do is try to be one of the best five or six teams and then hope that you can do that long enough that the odds shake down in your favor and you get a cup or two. And they did do it long enough for that.
The Capitals plan.
Yeah, and they did do it long enough, and it just never came, and it's unfortunate because they did a lot of things right, and I don't know, we've been kind of having this ongoing discussion through the week, because I wrote earlier about the Blues versus the Sharks and like which was the more miserable fan base and history and like what actually is misery? Like, is it worse to be the Oilers and you just never make the playoffs, or is it worse to be the Sharks and have 110 points every year and go in thinking you're going to win the Stanley Cup and then it never quite happens? So I don't know.
The latter is worse. I think the latter is definitely worse.
I also think it's interesting when you contrast the Sharks and the Blues. Like, the Blues have sort of always been humming in the background, and the reason why their drought isn't mentioned in the same way, I think, as other teams' droughts are, is because they haven't had the spectacular flameouts that the Sharks have or the Capitals had before they won, and nor were they like the same point of ridicule, I think, that the Leafs and the Flyers have been as far as their droughts go. So it's kind of an interesting contrast there. I agree. I think at the end of the day, it's a tough one because I'm a fan of a couple teams with significant droughts. The Mets being one of them, 86. The Nets being another one, but they're the Nets. But whenever this topic comes up, I think of my existence as a New York Jets fan. And I'd rather life be really interesting and have these incredible, inexplicable moments of pure fucking heartbreak than just consistent losing. Like, I feel like if you're going to go big and fail big, and then sports are more interesting because of that. So I would prefer to be the fan of the team that is the Sharks, personally.
Well, you know, Greg, you know who won't disappoint you? Ever.
Who's that?
Oh, jeez. This is a D.
Ryan, I'm doing my best, okay? The Athletic is a direct-to-consumer subscription service serving sports fans in North America. The model is simple. There are no ads, no pop-ups, and no autoplay videos. Instead, readers subscribe for authentic, in-depth coverage written and now spoken by journalists who know the league inside and out. You can get all of your league-wide news from NHL experts like Pierre LeBrun, Katie Strang, and many, many others, as well as local coverage for every team in the league, disappointing and otherwise. You can go to theathletic.com/soup for a 40% discount to The Athletic. That's theathletic.com/SOUP, all lowercase, for 40% off. That ends up being just $2.99 a month for more than 1,000 stories published each week, as well as audio content and video content. So subscribe right now using promo code SOUP. Download The Athletic app from the App Store and come experience The Athletic stories told in a whole new way.
Yeah, and I saw that they're doing the NHL thing now with the WNBA. They've got beat writers on every WNBA team, and
they do
serving that underserved audience.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't see that.
Oh, yeah. And like, you know, most newspapers, I think, probably throw some AP copy in about like
their WNBA
team, so that's pretty cool. And then the other thing is they have now branched out into motorsports as well, and I saw that they did the classic athletic move and hired Jeff Gluck, who has like a small army of supporters, to the point of like he's the guy who got laid off by USA Today and then created his own sort of like subscription site and just like made bank on people being like, no one else is talking about NASCAR, so I'm going to pay you to do it. So he brings his readership there too. So just more fucking people working for The Athletic, guys. That's the bottom line. And do check out the site. If it's the playoffs and you weren't subscribed to The Athletic, I don't know what the fuck you were reading, because like all the good writing besides me and Ryan was there. Do you like how I did that?
Thanks, Greg. Appreciate that one.
One last thing on the Sharks, and as we do the podcast, by the way, their breakdown day is later today as we tape. So we'll probably learn more about Carlson's injury and the whole thing. Let's zero in on the big three UFAs. Let's start with Carlson. The fuck? Like, what? How do you even approach this if you're a team, either the Sharks looking to re-sign him or you're a team looking to potentially sign him? Like, the first thing that you have to get from this guy is, you know, how long is the rehab from the surgery you need, right?
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. And what is that? And how much can your team take a look at him and figure out how big a risk you're taking here? And that's it. It's kind of a risk tolerance thing, because on the one hand, you're watching him in this year's playoffs and you're going, that guy's clearly not right. Mm-hmm. If he couldn't play this week in a game that the Sharks needed him to play in, do we want to commit 7 years. And
especially because he turns 29 at the end of the month.
Yeah, exactly. It's already one of those deals where you're kind of signing it knowing the last few years probably aren't going to work out well for you. But, you know, how many – what's the last few? Is it one or two, or does it end up being more, much more than that? The flip side is you watch him in this year's playoffs going, this guy was clearly hurt. He was clearly going at 70% speed for a lot of it. And he was still dominant when he was out there. So if he can get healthy, I mean, how do we not jump at the opportunity to have that guy in the lineup? And even if he does lose a bit of a step at some point, if he's still this creative and seeing everything this well, then isn't this still a guy that we have to go chase after? So I think it's going to be fascinating. I think there are going to be some teams out there that will just blow their brains out to try to get this guy, and there are going to be some teams that will not even want to pick up the phone and go anywhere near him. And it's going to be really interesting to see which group turns out to be right.
Yeah, I don't know who's going to give him that long-term deal at this point. That's the issue. Like we've talked about it before, the idea of a little super team action of him going to Tampa on like a short-term deal and just with a really high ticket.
We've seen so many terrible long-term deals given out to third-line wingers.
Yeah.
If this is the place where GM suddenly decide to draw the line, is arguably the best defenseman of his era, that's going to be very interesting, and it's going to tell us a lot about how they perceive risk and how they perceive something that's upfront and obvious like an injury versus things like aging curves and wear and tear that they obviously should have been looking at and have been burned repeatedly on.
And it's gonna be really interesting to see, like, I'm sure Vancouver would give him 7 years tomorrow. Like I there's going to be teams out there that would go long term with Erik Karlsson. The question is it the teams that he wants to play for? That's the real question.
Teams and GMs. There's going to be lots of, as always with this stuff, there are going to be GMs out there going, if I sign Erik Karlsson and he's amazing, he might help my team win a Stanley Cup. If I sign Erik Karlsson and he's hurt and it's a disaster, I'm getting fired anyway. So those future, the sixth and seventh years aren't my problem. They're going to be somebody else's, so I can't really lose.
What's Jeff Gorton's like appetite for an Erik Karlsson contract after the Shattenkirk contract? You know, like, and that was only 4 years. So
I think Erik Karlsson is not Kevin Shattenkirk.
I mean, if you squint hard enough.
Yeah. I mean, I think the Rangers are a good potential landing spot because you've done the. You're doing the rebuild. You're not necessarily done, but you win the lottery. You're going to get an elite player up front. Is this where you go and try to start saying, all right, it's time to start winning now? You have to do it eventually. Maybe, you know, would it be better to wait another year? It might be, but who's going to be available next year? Not necessarily Erik Karlsson.
The problem for the Rangers specifically is that who knows what Henrik Lundqvist looks like 1-2 years from now, and who knows who their next goalie is for sure. I mean, they have some pretty good goaltending prospects, but it's one of those situations where you go, you know, it's going to be the end of an era at some point with arguably the best goalie of his generation. And so, you know, if you don't have a reliable bridge in place or something you even think could be reliable, like I don't know if it's necessarily worth it to try to power out of the rebuild a year and a half into it.
Mm-hmm. I mean, unless you think that it's time to emerge and like you're going to sign, you know, Panarin potentially.
Right, they have money to spend, so
And like, you know, as far as Ranger rebuilds go, this is like a decade by comparison to what they usually do. So, you know, I don't know. It's going to be really interesting. I'm with you, Sean. Like, I need to hear what was wrong. I need to hear how to fix it, and then I'll be a lot more comfortable with going long term with Erik Karlsson, who showed flashes of being Erik Karlsson enough over the last 6 months that you're confident he can still be that guy. But it's hard to wash the lingering images of him being unable to, you know, track down a single person on a back check. In the last, you know, week, it's hard to wash that image from your brain. at this point. So it sucks. Joe Pavelski, who had a great year. He's turning 35. And the only caveat here is they did walk away from Patrick Marleau at one point. So who's to say they won't do the same thing with Joe Pavelski?
Yeah, and I mean, I guess they probably should, right? Like, he did have a great year, but he's 35. So not only if you sign him do you have to probably give him a bunch of money and a bunch of term, and who knows how that goes on either front, but also it's a 35-plus contract.
But here's the thing. I don't think it is because he misses by a few days. He's a July birthday.
Oh, really?
So okay. He gets in at like a 34 and 360 day type thing. So he doesn't have to go 35 plus, which helps because that opens up buyouts and
I do also wonder if he's going to end up kind of doing the thing, because the other Joe we're going to talk about did the thing of going, you know, whatever term you need from me, I'll take that term. As long as we have a gentleman's agreement that I can stay in San Jose as long as I want. You know, like, I feel like he might have that level of cachet with the organization.
He's a captain. He probably does.
So I as much as, like, you look at Pavelski and say, oh, if he was on the open market, somebody would throw, you know, 6 years at him. I think there's a place for him here, and they love him. And if you believe the window is still open for them to win, there's simply no way you can let him walk away.
Yep. No, I
correct.
I wouldn't say there's no way, but I strongly suspect that he comes back. And I don't think it is quite a Marleau situation, because while Marleau was there forever and was loved by a lot of the fan base, remember, Patrick Marleau was the captain of that team at one point, got stripped of it. As did Joe Thornton. So whereas Joe Pavelski was the guy that they sort of push those two aside to make him be the new leader.
And always the guy who performed in the playoffs, like even during the darkest timelines for the San Jose Sharks. Like, he was never the issue. He's a great player. And finally, Joe Thornton, like the words from Peter DeBoer and the rest of the Sharks after the series were very kind of like bummed about not having done this for Joe. And it's hard to read into that and hear, I couldn't parse out, hey, we're bummed because we lost and this was a good shot for this guy, or we're bummed because we lost and he's no longer going to be here. I couldn't figure out where that kind of landed, those words. But do you think he's back or do you think he's done?
I think he's going to retire, right? Like, he, you know, how many more? He was perfectly good in a third line role this year. I don't know how many points he had off the top of my head, but it was probably well above half a point a game again. Mm-hmm. But I mean, just how many more miles does he have on him? He's been in the league since he was 18, and it's tough, man. Like, I don't know.
He had 51 points in 73 games. Again, like, you know, he's still Joe Thornton. He's still got the hands.
He's still good enough to play.
Yeah, he can play, sure,
but like,
so it's really just up to him whether he wants to keep doing this. And, you know, like, we always
put in the time to do it.
Yeah, exactly. Because we kind of watch
like,
from
is it worth it for him?
Yeah, it's because it's not just like just showing up for the 82 games. It's everything starting pretty much right now in the off season just to get ready. And I don't know. It's going to be his call where his head's at, whether this the way this ended could be the sort of thing that just makes him feel like he has to go and give it another shot, or it may be the sort of thing that makes him feel like, you know what, it's just not going to happen. I've done literally everything you can do other than this one thing. I'm going into the Hall of Fame 3 years after I retire, first ballot, no questions. Maybe now it's time to relax and do some other things. It's 14th. Just completely his call.
14th in NHL history in points. That is
in playing
incredible.
His entire career in the dead puck era is
incredible.
You know, just
insane.
The season he had 100 assists. Good lord.
Yeah, yeah. I'm kind of go back and forth on it because I do believe that he genuinely loves doing this, and he always struck me as being one of these guys that might. I'm not going to say he's going to struggle with it, but I always thought he was one of these guys that doesn't maybe know what the next step is after you get done playing, because he's such a guy who likes to play and be around the locker room and live that life. So I feel like, you know, we're kind of in aged wrestler territory here, you know, yeah. of a guy who doesn't want to leave the road quite yet. You know
and,
what I
and
mean?
There is part of me that wonders if maybe we see him kind of do the Scott Niedermeyer path where he just waits a little bit, says, you know what, I'm going to take half a season and think about it. And if I want to come back, San Jose's got a spot for him, you know.
I forgot Niedermeyer did that. You're right.
Yeah, he just waited around, and you know, as long as you're not playing anywhere else, you know, you can come in, sort of see how the season's going. If San Jose looks like they're contending again, you can maybe tag back in. That's could be a possibility. Now, for some guys, once they shut it down, it's very hard to fire it back up again, but it worked out great for Niedermeyer, so maybe...
But there's another possibility here, too, which is, you know, I can't remember if this is, like, one of those, like, apocryphal things or what, but, like, in my head, it's always a thing of when Joe Thornton retires, his wife and kids and him are moving back to Switzerland, because his wife is Swiss.
I think okay. there was something to that, yeah, and he really and, enjoyed being there, like, during the work stoppages and stuff.
Yeah, and so, like... I don't know. Does he just go play for like HC Bern or whatever? Like at the yeah. end of his career, like he could totally do it, and he would be the best player in the Swiss League, maybe. You know, like at 38 years old or whatever he is now, and like I think that's a legitimate possibility. He's made as much money as he's ever going to need, you know, and like if he wants to bring his wife home and. You know, keep playing the game at a much lower or less demanding level. He can definitely do that. That's an option for him that a lot of guys don't have.
Hear me out. Jager saved Kladno. They didn't get relegated. Jager goes to Switzerland. You get a Thornton Jager line.
Hell yes. Let's go. All right.
And then just like have a different third guy on that line every night. Like a fans, have contests, lotteries, like... How much would you love to just skate on that line and just have them bounce pucks off your stick into the net a couple of times?
So if you find the autograph of Joe Thornton in your program, yeah. you get to be on his line.
Look under your seat. You're in. I don't have skates. You don't need skates.
There's a gear bag under your seat.
Yeah.
One of these gear bags, all like 17,000 of these gear bags are empty. The one that's filled... Come down to the locker room, folks. You're our first line left wing tonight.
Just
we guarantee you at least 2 minutes of power play time.
Yeah, just Jonathan Chichu, just with his fingers crossed every game. Like, please, come on.
Yeah, he's an HC Burns season ticket holder now.
Yeah.
God damn. Oh, that's good. Yeah. If and again, it could be HC Burn. It could be HC Davos. It could be any of those teams. And honestly, if you want to see the Joe Thornton Jaromir Jagr line next season, there's really only one way to get to those games, and that's with our friends at SeatGeek, I assume.
B-. I don't know that they serve Switzerland.
Folks, millions of live event tickets from sports to live music to comedy and more. SeatGeek has the tickets you're looking for all in one place. Obviously, a leading ticket provider for the Swiss Elite League, I assume.
It's the A-League.
Yeah, it's what I said. Probably also the KHL, which... allowed me to get the name of a Latvian city correct in bar trivia last night, only because I knew that the word Dynamo was in front of it in my mind.
Minsk.
Riga, sir.
Ah, yes. There's like four Dynamos in the KHL.
SeatGeek rates each deal on a scale of 1 to 10 and displays them on an interactive seat map. We've talked about it before. You fire up the SeatGeek app, you look at the game you want to go to, there's big, dark green dots, and you're like, those are the tickets that I like. It's like the traffic thing. Red means stop, and green means go to the game. That way you can stop searching for the perfect seat and start enjoying it. Every purchase is fully guaranteed, so you can shop on SeatGeek with confidence. No wonder SeatGeek has over 50,000 five-star reviews, much like this podcast. I've got the SeatGeek app on my phone. It's the thing I use to get concert tickets and Broadway tickets, and especially sporting event tickets, as I noticed both the New York Mets and the Chicago Cubs, Ruby's team du jour, are headed to San Francisco. I think it's in July, So we are already SeatGeeking some tickets for those games to catch them when they come through the Bay Area. And here's the great news for you. If you use the SeatGeek app, you can get $10 off your first purchase. All you need to do is use the promo code SOUP. So download the SeatGeek app, use the promo code SOUP, S-O-U-P, that spells SOUP, for $10 off your first purchase. That's promo code SOUP for $10 off your first SeatGeek purchase. And they, of course, are a proud, longtime sponsor of this dumb podcast. And we love it when you go to the games and take a picture of you at the game and then say you use SeatGeek. And I think that they love it, too. I don't think it's a coincidence, people, that they've advertised in the show since the Mesozoic era. And you people keep taking photos of yourselves at games and tagging SeatGeek in the tweets. Very nice of you. We do appreciate it. I'm going to venture into hack comedian territory for a moment and talk about airplanes because I've been on a few of them in the last couple of weeks. Two things. One, if you are somebody who has ever felt the desire to bring anything fish related onto a plane, be it a fish salad, a fish sandwich,
fish t-shirts.
Yeah. If you're Trey Anastasio and you decide to, you know, come on, just don't. Like I sat next to somebody who opened up a Tupperware container of, I don't know, a fucking grouper salad or some shit. And it was like someone let off a fucking bioweapon in the plane. It's terrible, and I don't understand people that do it. They don't even sell fish inside the fucking terminals. Like, I don't even know where they're getting fish from, outside of sushi. But that's what they had, and I hated it. And the other thing is, show of hands, who actively monitors what other people are watching on the plane on their seat televisions when you're on the plane?
Me, yeah, definitely. Yeah.
I will peer over for sure. Yeah, I'm. You know, like I won't actually like prairie dog it and get up and look around. But I will definitely hate watch whatever the guy in front of me is trying to watch.
As I mentioned yesterday, I want to instill a new protocol where if a person is watching Bohemian Rhapsody and it's the part where Freddie Mercury meets the other members of Queen, I want to be able to tap that person on the shoulder and say, "Get out! Get out while you can! It's still early!" And if it's the part where they're, like, close to playing Live Aid, I'll just let it go, because it's a pretty fucking great part of the movie. And then the other thing is, when people watch movies that I know have been edited for content on planes, it makes me a little upset. Like, I saw many people watching John Wick 2 on some of my flights in preparation, I guess, of seeing John Wick 3
Yep, you're almost there.
Parallelogram, and I know that there's no fucking way that's actually the John Wick 2 that I saw that's being shown in this goddamn plane. There's no way. It's impossible. So that upsets me too. It's like, if you really want to see a flick, don't watch it on the headrest. You know.
Well, yeah. I when I'm on a plane, I tend to watch kids movies. Like a lot of airlines now will just have like two or three Pixar movies or something like that, and that's always a good way to go about it.
Mm-hmm. I tend to actually go the other way. I watch the Adult Video News Awards show and try to just glimpse over and see what my seatmate is thinking about when they present Best Anal. So it's pretty good. I've gotten kicked off a plane for that. Yeah, it's not
this
good.
I don't. This went from Pixar to not Pixar really quickly.
or great Pixar. I mean, we haven't seen Toy Story 4 yet. We don't quite know what the plot is. Maybe Andy really grew up. Who's to say?
I
would love Toy Story 8, but the new toy in the room is a real doll. That'd be fantastic, in my opinion.
The horrifying implications being unfolded about like how that universe works, even in the trailer for Toy Story 4. I think you're talking about the movie AI. So, Ex Machina. I mean, shit.
I don't know, Woody. She always looks surprised for some reason. Her mouth is shaped like that. God, just put me in charge of Pixar. Bob Iger, who sends me emails. DJ, did you know that Bob Iger sends me emails? Did you get emails from Bob Iger when you worked at ESPN, Sean?
I don't think so. No. I did. How's Bob doing?
He's doing well, and occasionally, like I said, like it's jarring when you open up your email, your inbox, and you see, you know, the usual stuff, your credit card payments late, a forward from my dad about, you know, from the Daily News, an article that I read 2 days earlier, and then an email from Bob Iger. And it's basically just like how the company's doing, and then occasionally talking about some of the new things that the company is doing. But like, I just worry that one day I'm going to open up my email and see Bob Iger's name, and the subject heading is going to be your tweet. Like, oh, goddamn.
Yeah. Someday.
I don't know. He's too busy. He's too busy touring Star Wars: Edge of the Galaxy with J.J. Abrams and making him take pictures of him at like Tosche Station or whatever.
And by the way, where the power converters are. And by the way, is there any grander tradition than the Vanity Fair Annie Leibovitz Star Wars porn that comes out like roughly what, like 6 months before the movie does?
Yeah,
I still have the edition of Vanity Fair that had the Phantom Menace stuff in it, which was the first time we had ever seen any of it. Like the first time we saw like Ewan McGregor as Obi-Wan, and the first time we saw like Natalie Portman as Padme and stuff like that. That's such an incredible tradition. And it's like fucking beautiful. Like the photos that came out this week are fucking beautiful. Like Kerry Russell just basically
Don't say anything to me.
You didn't see the photos?
I refuse to look at this shit.
It's not a spoiler to say that Kerry Russell's playing like a bounty hunter.
I don't know what she's playing. That's fine. Thank you. Bye.
So you're that, hold on, you're that spoiler phobic that you won't even look at the photo spread?
I do not, like, I watched that trailer and we did the bonus episode because I knew you were going to make me. You cannot make me look at these fucking photos.
I'm going to make you.
I really surprised to see Chewbacca's lightsaber. I thought that was really, really strange. But
I can't wait for the moon to fall on him in this episode.
That's what. But hold on, do you like not go to the toy aisle then or anything?
First of all, I'm a grown man. I don't go to the toy aisle. Okay. But no, of course not.
Let's say the toy aisle in Target is between, I don't know, the hoodies, which I assume you would look at, and then also like the CD section. Let's say the toys.
I'm going to Target for all my music. And all the CDs I buy.
The compact discs section.
That's right.
Yep. And you know, so you're going from where the hoodies are to go look at the latest John Grisham novels and also the compact discs, and you never glance over at the toy section at Target.
I do not want to know anything about this movie.
Okay.
I already know more than I am comfortable with. Let me put it that way.
Because I made you watch the trailer, and the Death Star is in the water in the trailer.
Yeah, that's right.
Okay, that's fine. I listen. I appreciate the not being spoiled thing. Like, it still shocks me. Like, fucking shocks me how spoiled, how completely like we don't give a shit about spoilers. The Game of Thrones community was like literally just like posting GIFs of key moments and episodes 5 minutes after the episode ends.
Well, that's not really a spoiler. Yeah. I mean, that's less
a TV
of a spoiler,
show that came out. Yeah.
But it's a spoiler for people that hadn't seen the episode yet.
If it's important to you, don't fucking watch it on time.
As a representative of the West Coast lifestyle on this podcast, I will say it's kind of shit to post things.
I was wondering about this. Do you get, if Game of Thrones goes on HBO Now at 9 o'clock, do you get it at 6 o'clock your time, or do you have to wait till 9?
No, it was live. That's live, and SNL is actually live here, too, which I think is kind of interesting. They play it in prime time here.
That's weird.
Yeah, and I think it was – I don't know what did it. I remember there was a moment where they decided to start doing it, and I want to say it was maybe during the election or whatever. But they've continued to do it where they play it live here and then they play it again at 11:30, which is kind of wild. But no, it's you could watch all that shit at the same time. And like Game of Thrones, I watched the same time as the East Coast did. And I don't know, like I feel like other fandoms that I'm a part of are a lot more careful about like spilling the tea on episodes and plot lines and shit when it comes to like the shows on a Sunday and maybe people are watching it on a Monday morning. But yeah. Game of Thrones, man, it was like fucking light speed. Like they didn't give a shit.
Okay,
like,
so like, but help me out here because I didn't watch. I never got into Game of Thrones. But was there not an episode a few years ago? I want to say involving a wedding, where
yeah, the red wedding.
Okay, so where
or
everybody,
blue wedding.
But everybody knew what was coming because it had been in the books. This is when they were still overlapping with the books.
No, like there were like reaction videos of people who had read the books just yeah. filming their family members yes. who had not read the books
because,
and just going, oh my God.
Because yeah. there was like this community-wide effort to not spoil it. It was like those of us who know what's coming are not going to spoil this for everyone else. So there was like this, like somehow the internet came together and decided to just have this cone of silence around it, which I remember thinking right. at the time was pretty cool that they actually did that. So I don't know, maybe... I guess once the season kind of went off the rails, maybe they just decided to bail on that concept.
Yeah.
Well, like, it's not a spoiler anymore to say that and if you haven't seen it yet, I'm sorry, but, like, it's weeks later. But, like, when Arya killed the Night King and, like, videos of that kill shot became memes moments after the episode ended. I just had never seen that before. I'd never seen a situation where, like when Lost was on, there was a certain amount of sort of distance and space given to Lost
spoilers.
It was
also 2005, Greg.
That's what I'm saying. So maybe Twitter. It's less a comment about Game of Thrones than it is a comment on where we are on social media right now, where it's such a fucking gimme gimme now Instagram fucking society
we need different rules. Like, things that are on TV versus, like, things that are either movies or, like, Netflix binges. Like, we need different rules. Like, I don't know. If something is
like,
on at a specific time and
people
it's going to be, like, a communal event, you can't go on Twitter and yell at people for talking about the thing that is interesting in that moment.
Oh, just I agree with you. I think the people that go on Twitter and then get mad at Twitter because they spoiled something will get the fuck off of Twitter. And to which people would say, yeah. Well, it's my job to be on Twitter. I'm like, well, you can mute words. But the best example of what you just said is the Avengers. Like, you know, when Endgame came out, there was definitely a concerted effort not to spoil that movie for a lot of people that didn't get a chance to see it.
I think it's sort of like 2 weeks
the respect
after
is the investment
out.
They put into it.
I saw it 2 weeks after it came out, and I had not been spoiled on pretty much it. Now, I don't know enough about the year. Maybe I was spoiled and I just didn't pick up on it. But I managed to go 2 weeks, which is pretty rare.
Mm. Well, there you go. I just found it to be a little interesting. But, you know, in this day and age, you shouldn't be mad at the internet, I guess, to spoil something because you're on the internet.
There's so many other reasons to be mad at the internet.
Nazis.
Pick your battles.
And so on. Mostly Nazis. DJ Smith is the new head coach of the Ottawa Senators. That was news that came down as we're doing the podcast. What do you know about DJ Smith? DJ Smith, Sean.
First of all, we should all have a moment of mourning for the dream of Patrick Waugh. In working for Eugene Melnyk, it was too beautiful for this world. DJ Smith is interesting to me for two reasons. First of all, the fact that he was the prospect that went from the Islanders to the Leafs in the Wendell Clark trade back in 1996, which is the sort of thing that allows me to mention Wendell Clark for the second time on this podcast, which is when you know it's been a good show. The more interesting thing is usually when an assistant gets hired from one team to another team, there's this kind of reaction of, oh no, we lost that guy. That's a shame. And I'm not really getting that sense in Toronto. Like DJ Smith had been an assistant coach in Toronto for several years under Mike Babcock. He was not guaranteed to be coming back even if he hadn't been hired somewhere else. So, he had been one of his prime responsibilities was the penalty kill, which, as you may remember from recent playoff performances, has not been great.
Could have been better. Yes.
And there was, even when there was that initial, will Mike Babcock be back? And then Kyle Dubas eventually came out and said, yes, Mike Babcock is coming back. Nobody had said anything about the assistant coaches. So full credit to DJ Smith. He found an opportunity. I think he's certainly jumping at the right time. And he's even given all the things we could say about Ottawa, there's 31 of these jobs in the world and good for him for getting one. He has a reputation as a guy who's good with young players, has a reputation as a guy who that the players like, sort of a player's coach. And that's uh, that, that could very well be a good fit in Ottawa. But meanwhile, in Toronto, there doesn't seem to be a lot of tears being shed for this guy leaving, because his time may have sort of run its course. So maybe it's one of those moves that works out great for everybody.
Yeah, and I also think it's a job where the bar is, like, near the Earth's core, it's so low. Like, it just, you know, I think it's a job where...
if he doesn't fall down an open manhole cover, he'll be better than at least two of his three previous coaches.
If he makes it, like, halfway, makes it to the All-Star break, he'll be already, like, the third on the list of 10 years. So, yeah. Mm-hmm.
And I guess we talked about in the bonus episode, though, they're not a team with a lot of hope just because of how bad the ownership is. But if you're DJ Smith, I mean, this might be you've been in the mix for other gigs. This might be the one you're getting, you know?
Yeah. Well, you certainly, if you're DJ Smith, you don't pass this up waiting for a better opportunity,
for sure.
Especially knowing that you may be on shaky ground or even no ground at all in Toronto. And I guess the other thing I'd say is, credit to the Senators that at least they hired somebody who wasn't either already in the organization or a former coach. They didn't just go the comfortable route. They went out a little bit. We'll see. We'll see if it ends up being the right guy. But it's certainly, given his reputation, there's the potential for it to be a good fit. And it certainly seems like it was the right time for him to make that move, and maybe it works out for everybody. And if so, that'll be the best case.
Ryan and I were talking off mic before about the utter horror that was Rick Bowness getting a fucking interview in Ottawa. I mean,
yeah,
there's retreads and then there's retreads, right?
Like that's going back away. I mean, he's been behind benches ever since. You talk about experience, but yeah, that just got strange with all of the guys. And now I guess now the interesting thing is, what happens with Mark Crawford? What happens with the AHL coach that was interviewed and didn't get it? Remember a few years ago, Luke Richardson was in kind of a similar situation and he chose to leave. There'll be ripples from this, but you got to pick the guy you think gives you the best chance to win. And if that's DJ Smith, then good luck to him.
How are we feeling about Tippett and Edmonton, as that's where it seems like it's headed?
Sure, why not? I mean, you know, like I thought McClellan was a good coach. I thought Hitchcock was a good coach. I think Dave Tippett's a good coach, but what's he going to, like, how's he supposed to make something work with that roster as it's currently constituted? We're being assured that, you know, changes are coming and all that kind of stuff, but as it stands right now, I can't be too enthusiastic about, you know, this guy's the guy who's going to sort it all out or any of that kind of thing.
Mm-hmm. But he's, I mean,
just because of, look at the roster.
He's a good coach. And
yeah
it's certainly of the guys that were left. I don't think the Oilers are in a position where they can go the DJ Smith type route and get somebody who's going to be making their debut. So I think it's reasonably solid. Speaking of the Oilers and guys being new coaches, did I miss it? Has Dallas Eakins been announced in Anaheim or
no? But they're still in the playoffs,
right? That's what I was. They're not
okay.
San Diego's so still right. in the playoffs. Yeah, I think that's probably the reason why. But I mean, logic would dictate that that's
like.
Where
are we concerned that if you
He's
make that announcement,
100% that guy.
So are we concerned that if you make that announcement, he just like wanders off and forgets to coach in the playoffs the rest of the way, or is this?
Well, I just don't think you need to make the announcement because everybody knows that's what's going to happen.
Okay,
you know what I mean.
I just keep waiting for it to come. And
I also wonder if like you add a few like a zero to your fucking bank account if you win the Calder Cup.
Yeah,
if you're him, you
maybe
know
that's it.
So, I mean the Berube thing is one of the weirdest things, the fact that he's still interim coach, but part of the explanation is that they just didn't want to they liked how things were going and didn't want it to be anything but the way things were going. And then the other explanation I've heard is exactly how it's played out, which is fuck, this team's playing really good. I could probably fucking get a cup ring. Now what's my asking price? Mm-hmm. You know?
So, yeah, no, it makes sense for him, but it's very like the team should have done it in February.
Yeah. Right, as soon as they started to turn the corner. But yeah, but Doug Armstrong says it's a list of one now, is what he said, for his coaching search. So congratulations to Craig Berube. The Tippett thing's interesting. More interesting to me is that we are actually seeing palpable evidence of Ken Holland cleaning out the fucking front office, which I didn't actually think we'd see. Like Craig McTavish shipped off to Russia, Dwayne Sutter fired. They even got rid of the goddamn PR guy. It's starting to happen there. There's actually change being affected for the Edmonton Oilers.
Yep.
What a time to be alive.
That's a good sign. Even if those particular moves don't work out or don't turn out to have been the right moves, the fact that he's not coming in and saying, "Oh, I need a year to see how things operate," and let's just, you know, there seems to be some sense of urgency. So that is good news for Oilers fans.
Mm-hmm. All right, Stanley Cup Final. My God, what a matchup! I've not made a formal pick that is only done on my website in print with my face next to a logo. But I will say that I am leaning, because of obvious heaping spoonfuls of recency bias, I'm leaning Blues in the series. That's where I'm leaning. Boys?
I'm Bruins in six, but I don't feel great about it.
You don't feel great picking them, or you don't feel great that that's actually going to happen?
Yeah, I think it's... basically a coin flip, maybe, slightly favoring the Bruins, but it's just one of those things where, you know, I worry about the long layoff and how that affects their quote-unquote rhythm or whatever you want to say, and also, you know, the fact that Tuukka Rask is taking a week and a half off or whatever it's been.
Oh, yeah.
To after being a 940-something goalie. Meanwhile, like, Jordan Binnington was just 970 in the last three games of that series. So, yeah, like, I think the Bruins are the better team, like, 1 through 20. And I think that, you know, even if Tuukka Rask comes back to earth a little bit, like, they still have the firepower to get past Jordan Binnington enough to win the series. But, you know, I think it's real close.
The way their bottom six played in that last series, and maybe even the series before that, really tipped the scales a little bit for me with the Bruins. Like, I thought that was going to be a liability for them, and they look as deep as anybody in the playoffs now. It's kind of crazy.
Yeah, I filed my pick this morning. I picked the Blues in six because shrug emoji. At this point, I have no idea what's happening. I've been wrong on most of my picks. So I like Ryan, I'm a little bit concerned about having an 11-day layoff. Although, I mean, the Blues are going to be off, 6 days by the time we finally get going. So, I mean, it's going to be a close series. I do think that Boston is the better team. But there's something to be said a little bit for momentum and for having a group that's peaking at the right time and that will have at least a little bit less rust early on. So, I'm going St. Louis and as per my own rules, I have to pick the team to win on home ice. So I had to go with St. Louis in six.
Well, the other thing I think we should say about, how the Blues, you know, peaked at the right time or whatever, is they were pretty bad in the playoffs. Like, they kept winning, but, like, before game three, or game four, rather, they were minus one goal difference in the playoffs.
Wow.
Jake Allen was fine. He's up to, like, 914 or something, which is, I mean, it's good enough to win you some games, obviously, but it's certainly not enough to, like, come close to sealing a series. And, you know, they're peaking at the right time, but also, you know, did it against a...
You mean Binnington? You said
what
Jake
did I
Allen.
Say?
Jake, you
oh,
said
yeah,
Jake Allen.
Yeah, I meant Binnington, obviously. And yeah, like, they really played really well against San Jose, but also San Jose was incredibly banged up. They were missing three of their five best players, all that kind of thing. Like, I'm just not... I'm not as all in on how good the Blues have been. Like they were really good the last three games against a really depleted Sharks team for sure. But and like that's it's one of those things of like it's just the reality. Like that's not kind of taking anything away from them. They crushed the Sharks once Erik Karlsson was cooked and once Joe Pavelski was out and that kind of thing. But I don't know. I think I just like Boston's top line a little better. I like the Bruins' top 4D a little bit better, that kind of thing. So,
There's two things I really liked about this Blues team. The first is that I think they're a really good road team, and not just walking into Winnipeg and winning three games in a really tough place, but they play the kind of style that I think is beneficial for trying to win on the road in the playoffs. So it wouldn't shock me to see them do well in Boston. And the other thing is that, like, I'll be forever impressed with the fact that when the hand pass thing happened, another team would have just fucking gotten boo-boo-faced about it and felt like the world was conspiring against them, being angry about it. And all of their energy, and it wasn't just lip service, but this was what they did. All their energy was focused on the fact that it should have never gotten there and that they fucked up by allowing them to tie the game. And they had to be better at closing out teams, and then they won the next three games. And I don't have the mental makeup to witness what we witnessed in game three and then come back and be that mature about it. Like, I'd be fucking raging. I'd be like muttering shit under my breath around on ice officials for the next three games. And they kind of focused their energy in a completely different way and then just took over the series after that. So I'll be forever impressed by that.
Yep.
Yeah, they're good. I mean,
come in handy. Yeah. Come in handy when they get screwed over by something horrible that the Bruins do. They will be.
Well, that was the thing about the Landeskog thing that happened in Game 7 against the Sharks. Like that was the thing where everybody I talked to said that kid handled it brilliantly. Like he's going to get every call next year because of the way he handled that situation. And I'm sure it's probably the same thing with the Blues. Like they didn't, nobody went the full march or so on the officials after the hand pass thing.
Mm-hmm. Although, by the way, we should probably, cause I think this just came out today. The, all four officials from that play, not going to the Stanley Cup final.
It was a titanic fuck up. It was insanely bad.
There was some question
up
about whether because I mean they're kind of running out of referees right now. So they've got
my man Tim Peel lives in St. Louis. Just want to point that out.
He's available.
He is.
They might need him the way they're dropping.
By the way, like let's just I know Sharks fans have been just fucking screaming at the heavens about the headshots that have been missed and the suspensions that should have happened and shit like that. I don't think that either the hits on Hurdle or Pavelski were suspension worthy, but Sammy Blais should have been fucking suspended for the headshot on Justin Braun in game three. And he wasn't because the NHL didn't want to pile on the Blues. Let's be fucking honest here. Like that's why he wasn't suspended.
Yeah, probably. I mean, I thought the Barbashev hit on Hurdle should have been a game. He hit him right in the head. I didn't even think the Pavelski one was a headshot. Like I just thought he kind of like he hit his head, but
it was awkward.
Yeah, it was a clean check that you know had an unfortunate ending or whatever you want to say. I didn't think that was kind of. I just thought that was just a regular check.
It took a lot for me to not be completely ragey at this like line of criticism from Sharks fans during the series that was like, oh, everybody's up in arms over a hand pass that literally hands a victory to the Sharks in overtime in one of the most egregious miscarriages of justice that we've ever seen. But no one's talking about the headshots because I guess they don't care about CTE. Like, you motherfuckers. Like, of course we care about CTE. Both things can be true. One can be a horrible play that deserves loads of scorn because the NHL, four NHL officials missed a hand pass, while we can also be concerned about concussions. But not every fucking hit results in a suspension, despite there being an injury on the play. It's an injurious game. I don't know. It bothers me when people play the equivocation game when it comes to like concussions in some situations.
Yeah, and if you don't want to see that kind of thing, maybe outlaw checking. I don't know. Just something to think about.
But that's the thing. Like you got to eventually get to that end point because like no rule that you put in place will prevent Joe Pavelski from getting correct. Injured on that hit because yep. it's just
it was a clean hit.
Yeah. I don't know, man. It just it bothers me when people play the but oh you don't but what about player safety thing?
Oh, I get yeah. I guess you don't care about this then.
Yeah. Yeah. Oh God, that was a rough one. But c'est la vie. And they were upset. I mean, they were just fucking pissed that you know this team that looked like they might have been in a position to win a cup finally didn't and
totally shit the bed. Yep.
Yeah, and shit the bed and also had some rotten luck after having some. Incredible luck.
Right. I mean, they shouldn't have even gotten to the second round by you know, bad calls going yeah. their way. So
yeah. that was the other thing. All the Sharks fans,
guys.
All the Sharks fans being like, oh, yeah, well, I thought we were lucky. I'm like, this is, you're proving the point. Like, when the luck ran out, look what happened. So, anyways, I'll go Blues in six as well. Ryan, where do you fall on the cosmic stuff in the postseason? You're a straight laced numbers guy.
What do you? I don't know what you mean by this. What I mean, cosmic like, stuff like, are we talking about?
Like Gloria, like
oh,
the little
they picked the song,
the yeah. sick little girl. You know the Pat Maroon stuff. Like there's a lot of the stuff that you'd find on the commemorative Blu-ray for the Blues
okay,
championship.
Sure, yeah.
Where do you fall in the cosmic stuff? Being that you are, of course, a hardcore numbers guy.
I don't think any of it matters at all. yeah. Okay. You all like a song. Like you know.
Yeah.
There's a song. There's every team has a song.
Yep.
And by the way, the Blues have two songs now with Country Roads. I don't understand that one, but
yeah, that's a tradition.
I also do not want to hear that have that explained to me. So mm-hmm. don't reach out about that, but definitely also like come on. Like it's one of those things where that all that stuff is fun to talk about or whatever right up until you know, I'm sure there were feel-good stories around whatever teams the Patriots and Red Sox killed in their respective championships, and then that was the end of that. So, you know, if you look hard enough, there's always going to be like a fun storyline for like I'm sure Bruins beat writers are hard at work finding one right now for. Oof.
Yep.
For you know, the Bruins have to win this one for so and so. He was on the 1992 team and he was in a coma during the 2011 Cup. So you know, like probably, that shit. Like
yeah, probably nicknamed Sully. Let's be honest. Whoever he is,
yeah, for sure. So yeah, to me that's just like it has literally no impact on what happens mm-hmm. on the ice. So.
Sean, you're a more compassionate person. What do you think about the cosmic stuff?
I you know what? They are nice stories, and I like some of them, many of them, but every team has them. Literally every team has got these, you know, oh, you listen to Gloria, that's a song from the 80s. Yeah, the Leafs have Hall & Oates, and if we'd all be sick of that song if they were in the final, mm-hmm. but they're not, so nobody cares, nor should they. Mm-hmm. It's just... Every team always has this stuff. It's kind of like how at the end of the year we wait until the playoffs are over, and then whichever team went deep has good chemistry, and whichever teams didn't has bad chemistry, and it just always ends up shaking out that way. It's the same sort of thing. I mean, we need stories like this to talk about. God knows, especially when we've got 3 days between pretty much every game in the Stanley Cup Final, but it doesn't actually mean anything.
All right, lightning round. Here we go.
Oh,
will Brad Marchand get suspended in the Stanley Cup Final?
Absolutely not.
No, he would have to murder somebody, and even then,
that's exactly
it's questionable.
Right.
Yep.
Who ends up having the higher save percentage for the series, Jordan Binnington or Tuukka Rask?
Tuukka Rask.
I'll say Binnington just so we can disagree.
Yeah, I'll say Rask. finally, who wins the Conn Smythe?
Also Tuukka Rask.
Yeah, I picked St. Louis, so I picked Jaden Schwartz as my Conn Smythe guy.
I think Rask has been so good that like he would have to totally shit the bed in the cup final. Like he'd have to have a Martin Jones type.
You mean like even if they lose the series? Or are you
yeah,
saying if
because oh. because I think a lot of people just saw what he did to the Hurricanes and were like, oh yeah, like he should win.
Has that happened since Giguere? Was that the last one that the losing team won the Conn Smythe?
Yeah, that sounds right.
So it's been a while. I don't know. Maybe it'd be neat to see, but I don't. Oh, Chris, then we'd have to listen to Blues fans be disrespected over.
Yeah, it's tough because Schwartz is fucking, 12 goals already. Like, he's going to have the numbers. I think Giguere won because of the absence of a really strong, overwhelming candidate on the Devils
side.
Yeah,
and plus the Devils had won twice, and it was sort of like, this is a good team. They're supposed to win, and you didn't really feel the need to go and pick someone out as being responsible. I don't know. I'd be very surprised if Rask won in a losing cause, but it's not out of the question.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, and the other thing I would say, too, is you can kind of split the vote between a number of guys on the Blues. Like, you could say Tarasenko. You could say Colton Parayko, who's been so... He was so
good.
He's
been awesome.
Oh, my God.
Yeah.
I think between the number of, like, legitimately very good candidates on the Blues could maybe do the thing of splitting the vote, and then the, like, one exceptional candidate on the Bruins maybe gets in. I don't know.
I'll go Binnington. I think maybe you get a little Jaden Schwartz goal drought. Maybe Binnington pitches a shutout in a critical game in the final. And knowing our writing brethren, bestowing the MVP upon a rookie goaltender might be a narrative that they can't avoid. So
is Binnington American or Canadian? Because that will make a difference.
He's 1,000,000,000% Canadian.
He's gonna win no matter what the outcome.
That's pretty great. I might steal your idea for Tuukka. That's a really good idea, because he's had that kind of postseason.
He's been incredible. He's 940. Yeah. Although, to be fair, last time he was 940 and made the Stanley Cup final and didn't win, he didn't come close to winning
Yeah, that's true. All right, here we go. We asked you, the Pucksoup listeners, who you got in the Cup final. Michael writes in, the refs, because they've been surprising us all postseason, and I think they'll elevate their game in the final round. Hashtag because it's the Cup. A yam named James writes in, St. Louis, because I just can't handle another win for the city of Boston, so say we all. DJ Mitchell writes in, the people in Buffalo who can rest easy knowing our market will have the best ratings on NBC for the Cup final. Those Buffalo fans, man, they always bring it. This is the truth. Blues in six, says Jordan. They got the bad shit happens but it doesn't matter mentality, but I'll laugh out loud to my grave if they do it in four, because these playoffs have been bonkers. I, in the back of my mind, think there could be a sweep in the series either way, just because of the way the playoffs have gone. Because it's just been fucking nuts. Let's see here. Michael Braun. Oh, this is the, I believe, the James Myrtle take. The Leafs, because of the took Boston to game seven hot takes.
How does this Cup final affect the Leafs, though? That's a really important question we all have to ask.
And then Pat Clark writes in, the Blues because maths. Isles swept the Pens. Canes swept the Isles.
Bruins swept the Canes. So he's going Blues in four, then.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. The ultimate
that would
sweep.
Be extremely fucking funny, so yeah. I hope that happens.
It is kind of great. Eric Kuhn, the Blues, because the hockey gods will save us from having to listen to Bill Simmons go on and on and on and on and on and on and on about the Bruins and then the Patriots and the Red Sox.
The NHL is drunk this year.
Yeah, because that's worked out great over the last few years.
David Pastrnak is basically the reincarnation of Kevin McHale.
Who is this year's Patrick Beverley? That's what we want to know.
Zdeno Chara, Robert Parrish, who you got?
Caleb writes in.
Who says no? Who says no?
St. Louis, because John Krasinski won the quality of post office career competition, so Jenna Fischer is due. That's interesting. John Krasinski, a Bruins fan. Jenna Fischer, a Blues fan, we found out. One of more than a few celebrity Blues fans, including handsome actor John Hamm. All right.
R.I.P. Splitting Up Together.
Yeah. Oh.
Very bad show.
Mm-hmm.
Very bad.
John Krasinski, by the way, would make an amazing Mr. Fantastic, don't you think? Wouldn't he make a great Reed Richards?
John sure.
Krasinski? John Krasinski for Reed Richards, Emily Blunt for The Invisible Woman to do a Fantastic Four. Okay, and then, you know, I don't know who Human Torch would be. We could just make it Michael B. Jordan again. That'd be pretty great. Just forget that ever happened and make him Human Torch.
Well, he's already Killmonger in the MCU.
You could just recast. And then who gives a shit about the Thing? Make it Michael Chiklis again. He was great.
He was great.
All right.
My longtime, me and Sean Gentile's longtime enemy, Michael Chiklis.
Now, why was he your enemy? Is this a stick to sports meme?
Yeah, it was, because he put out some really bad song about the troops or whatever, and we made fun of him on Twitter, and he got really mad about it.
He did?
Yeah.
I wasn't aware of that. I wasn't aware that he was a crooner, Michael Chiklis.
Yeah, he's... I'm trying to remember. He's one, like, he's like a straight up crooner, like, hey, cat, like that kind of music. It's bad. It was a really bad song.
A Joe Piscopo type?
Yes.
Mm. Song Troops. Just looking it up real quick. Sorry.
Sure.
That's this week's Puck Soup. It's called Till I Come Home by the Michael Chiklis Band.
Hell yeah. Let's go.
You can find my stuff at Wyszynski on Twitter, W-Y-S-H-Y-N-S-K-I. You can find my stuff on ESPN all series long. And then me and Emily are going to be doing live podcasty type things, I think, during it. Maybe video, who's to say. But do check out, you know, just keep an eye out for all the hashtag content from the Stanley Cup Final.
Just sign up for the Puck Soup newsletter on our Patreon. Music recommendations, TV, movies, obviously hockey stuff, probably some other stuff in there. I'm going to see Aladdin tomorrow, so I'll probably write about how that is bad. Did you know Guy Ritchie directed the Aladdin?
You know, I saw that you were fascinated by that. Yeah, Guy Ritchie of Lock, Stock, and Two Smoking Barrels fame directed the Aladdin remake.
So is Vinnie Jones in it? Like, is Vinnie Jones is Jafar? Is that right?
I bet you ought to rub that lamp.
Boy, mate.
I recognize some of those names. My stuff's on The Athletic. I had a week where I wrote a lot about losing and sadness, because it's basically my beat. So I wrote about whether the Sharks or the Blues had the best claim to the... abandoned Iron crown Throne. That the Washington Capitals held until last year. And then I also did, and anyone who follows me on Twitter over the years knows, I kind of love the concept of the playoff ultimate loser being the team that loses to 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 the Stanley Cup winner. And so I went back and did the full history of that and figured out which teams have done it the most, which teams have never done it, all of that sort of thing. And, and also touched on, as we talked about, the fact that the Pittsburgh Penguins could pull off the near impossible quadruple sweep ultimate loser status. And my argument is that the Bruins should basically throw the Stanley Cup to make sure that happens, because you never this you won't get this opportunity again. You got to grab it while you can.
And to go back to your joke there, Ryan, the St. Louis Blues, sort of the Bran Stark of the NHL, if you think about it, as far as potential champions go.
Got pushed out a window. Yeah.
Always lingering in the background. Never really... You know,
seem to take a season off every once in a while. Just nobody.
Yeah. Basically said, we're no longer the St. Louis Blues somewhere around January.
That's right.
Right.
Mike Yo was Hodor.
He's Yodor, buddy.
Fuck. God damn it. This podcast is over. Goodbye.
Right. Go to the Patreon. Listen to the mailbag. We'll talk to you next week. Take care, everybody. Bye.
See ya.
Bye-bye.
Sticks and hits and goals and saves and slap shots and goons. We've got sportly commentary to an FU commute. But we also cover movies, TV shows, hits and tunes. It's your weekly bowl of hockey and nonsense. Puck Soup.